League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the After Further Review podcast. I'm Pete Doherty, along with Eric Baranchek. We're here to talk about the Green Bay Packers' impressive 30-14 win over the Tennessee Titans on Sunday. Eric, let's dive right in. 2 weeks ago, if you told me that Malik Willis was playing two games, I would have said if they come out of it 1-1, they'd have done great. And here they are 2-0. What are you making?
No kidding. I think everyone felt the same way. I was expecting them to be 0-2, to be honest.
So was I.
I didn't think there'd be any way that they were going to be able to do what they can. But I tell you.
Well, yeah. What do you make of it? Do you think we have learned anything about the team other than they found a way to win two games?
No. Yeah, I think we did. I think they found something. I think this is the offense that Matt LaFleur always dreamed about. You look at his lineage and where he came from as a coach and, coming from San Fran and being friends with Shanahan, that tree runs pretty wide and deep, and you really like the way that they do a lot of misdirections. If you're watching like LA with McVay and you're watching Shanahan, there's a lot of motion. And there's a lot of commitment to the run, and more so with Shanahan's 49ers. And I remember watching them when they came up to the Packers when it was the first couple of years, and it was like, wow, just complete misdirection and using guys as a bait. And one of the things that I thought was really interesting was how they bait guys and use guys as decoys. I mean, there was. Yeah, I remember it was the NFC Championship game where the first season that the Packers went there and got clubbed. I mean, they had a play-action run, of all things. So it was just really unique on what they're doing. And not only that, this is a pretty – I think the Rams and I think San Francisco, they have a really quarterback-friendly offense. And, part of it's with all the misdirection. I mean – let's be honest. I mean, when you're looking at it from just a basic defensive, how are we going to stop this? And I'm a defensive guy, so that's where I always go to first. I don't know where to start. The hardest thing for any defensive guy to do is to stay home and control your gap and rely on the other 10 guys to do their gap. And it's really, really hard to do that because naturally you want to go to the football. Well, one of the things that they've done recently, and more so on Sunday, was they run against the pull. So what I mean by that is you pull there was one play in the third quarter. They pulled a guard and they pulled the tight end across the formation. Normally, if you're a defensive guy, that's your key. If you're a linebacker, and your key is the guard on that play, and he pulls towards the football, that's where the ball's going. He pulls away from the football, that's where the ball's going. Well, you saw the Packers pull not only a guard and a tight end towards the football, and they ran back away. I mean, it was designed that way. And those are things that really screw up your safeties and screw up your linebackers, and that's how you can rip off runs of 8-10 yards. And really get the defense on their heels. And by the end of the game, by halftime, you're scratching your head going, I'm doing all my reads. I'm doing all my keys. I'm following my keys perfectly. And the ball's going the other way, so I can – it's really, really hard on defenses. And you've heard it more than anybody that they talk about how they want to do window dressing. And they want to make eye candy and make things difficult for linebackers and safeties to make reads. And those reads got to be so quick. You know, let's look at the first play of the game, Pete. They got a screen going up to the right side of the defense or the offense, and play side backer is inching out, and the backside backer at the snap of ball is running there because they got a tight end and a running back out in the flat. So it looks like if you're going to commit a tight end out there, it's got to be throwing a screen to that guy or a quick hitch to him. And son of a gun, it was just enough to stop that backer that for Jaden Reed to cut across, and the backers know. I mean, it's an easy read. You or I or my 12-year-old son can make that throw because it's perfect. It's right in front of the quarterback, a crossing pattern to one of your better receivers. You know, it's just amazing the way they're able to do that. And that also just furthers the fact that defense has got a key on 11, which, again, they move them around. They fake to them. They do all that fun stuff. And someone else is carrying the football. So it's really tough. And, you know, with Jaden Reed, he's a walking first down. I mean, he had two carries at 9.5 yard average, 4 catches, 12.5 yard average. It's really hard not to key on that guy during you just focus and circle that guy, and this is the guy we're going to stop.
I've got to think that with how effective they ran the ball these last 2 weeks with a quarterback who's just limited in the offense, he's only been here a month, and you know, he's got talent, but they can't throw too much at him. So the route trees, the whole passing game's got to be, you know, relatively unsophisticated compared to with what Jordan Love. If they can run it with that guy running the offense and the defense is knowing that's going to be their approach, then I got to think LaFleur is thinking he can really run it with Love too. And that's got to make Love's life a lot easier in a different way. Is that maybe the effect, the Aaron Jones effect of last year, where when Jones played, they were a lot better team, and that was probably one of the reasons?
For sure. And I think the other aspect of it too, like you were just touching on, is it's going to open up the passing game because now they're going to have a quarterback that's got a little bit more skill and a little bit more experience to be able to go out there and instead of it being a tuck it and run, it could be a really big play for them because there's guys out of position all over the field. And I expect that the play action pass to be that much more deadly because, I mean, let's face it, Love can – getting him on the move and throwing the ball that's one of his best attributes. And giving that opportunity to him with this type of stuff that's running around him, it's only going to make him better and really make that offense much more deadly.
Yeah, if LaFleur needed any convincing about, you know, shooting for a 50-50 run-pass ratio, which is pretty rare in this league. I think last year there was – I'd have to go look again, but I think there was only like three teams that were – two or three that were 50-50 or more run to pass. I mean, even though he's got this quarterback they're paying $55 million to, I got to believe this has convinced him that even with Love, they're better off still trying to run the ball a lot.
For sure. And when they are committed, they commit to run the ball. They run the ball. There you got 3 and 4 guys running at the point of attack, other than the inside zones that they run to keep guys honest. But when they're running the perimeter, I mean, you got a tight end, a lot of times a pulling guard, and a wide receiver who's coming down crackbacking. And it's pretty good to see it. It's just complete commitment to the run game and to gain ground with the ball on the ground. And it's, you know, there are very few teams that do that. You know, one of them is San Francisco. You saw that out of the Rams a little bit, but I think more so on the Mike Shanahan style of running the football and just power football. And then you squeak out the back end with a play action pass. And you know, Malik Willis, you got to look at that too. I mean, he was part of the running game. I mean, yeah, he dropped 73 on the ground. You know, that was 12 yards a gallop. So, you know, that was pretty impressive too. I mean, and so that opened it up the game too for them to be run more RPOs, to be able to have, you know, design quarterback draws, you know, those kind of things where they took advantage of his wheels that they probably aren't going to put Love in those situations a lot. I can't imagine that they would, at least early on, till he's really, really healed up. But boy, I tell you, I'm astonished at the way that they have been able to just completely commit to the run game and make it work. And you know, the other part, we talk about all these Greyhounds and these running backs and all the big names, but the guys that get it done, those five guys with their hands on the ground and a tight end. You know, Tucker Kraft is turned into so far the complete tight end, being able to catch the ball, run with the ball in his hands, and then supplement that with a heck of a good blocker. And, you know, not just going through the motions, but he's a blocker. And those things, to find that guy, it's obvious why they decided to cut that fullback. They didn't need a fullback. They got it. They got 85, and 88 is serviceable. Sims is serviceable. Does in the run game, they're not terrible. I mean, you know, they're not my all-time favorite JerMichael Finley, but they're a step above them. At least they're willing to go out and block, and that makes a big difference when you got a tight end and wide receivers on the perimeter that are blocking, and not only blocking at the point of attack, but downfield. And just they got that. I don't know if it's because they're a young team, or if they're just all bought in, and that's – I don't know which one that is. But, man, I tell you, the way that they sacrifice and get out and block is really awesome. Even Christian Watson is out there giving it in the run game, so and blocking downfield and making things happen. And that's where the 10-yard runs turn into 20-yard runs and the 5 yards turn to 10. It's the complete commitment to the run game. And it's I haven't seen anything like that in Green Bay in my lifetime.
You know, Josh Jacobs is looking like the back that you would have thought he was with what they paid him and from a little bit that I'd seen with him with the Raiders, for instance. The guy who's a surprise to me is Emmanuel Wilson. You know, last year, I remember, like, I do online chats, and in the offseason, people were asked about running back, and I would just throw it there, you know, and there's always the chance Emmanuel Wilson, you know, maybe he'll be maybe he'll improve a fair amount and be a good back next year. And I thought it was a possibility, but I really, to be honest, didn't think it was going to happen. But, I mean, he's been a good back these last couple of weeks. He's more north-south, but he's still got some shiftiness to him, and he's a little more explosive than I thought. I don't know. I wouldn't have guessed that even – you know, at the end of training camp, I wasn't sure. You know, I wasn't that sure. But even though
is the first time we've seen him run with the number one unit. Yeah, and the other part too is he kind of it like the light bulb went off. And man, when he just plants his foot and gets north and south, he's pretty good. He, you know, runs behind his pads a little bit. He's pretty good. And that, I don't know if in the preseason this year, I was not sold on him. I certainly. You know, between him and Dylan, I think the only difference there was is that this guy had just a little bit more wiggle and the ability to turn the corner a little quicker. But, man, downhill, he's a load too.
Is that unusual for a back to you know, usually I don't remember running backs. Like, they show – I felt like they generally show who they are that rookie season. And – I don't know. I just don't remember seeing a running back improve as much as he did from last year, unless it was just that he got so few chances that we really didn't get a chance to see who he was.
Well, that, and I think the other part too is, you know, the offense is a little different too than what we saw in the preseason. Preseason was pretty vanilla stuff, and now there's better blocking without a doubt, and you know, we talk about between week one and two and week two and three. I mean, the big growth pattern steps are taking place right now. Next week probably should be a little bit better because, quite honestly, this is really – the first three games is really their preseason. I mean, let's no bones about it. The way that they approach training camp and preseason games, this is – the first game for sure is the preseason game. And, you know, you saw big steps between – the Eagles and the Colts, And now an even bigger step between the Eagles and what we saw on Sunday versus the Titans. So their offensive line is coming together. I'd say Elgton Jenkins looks, you know, pre-knee injury. You got a guy out there who's playing for not only a paycheck, but for his job in the future, and Sean Ryan. And Tom looks to be get that pec injury healed up, because the way he was doing things yesterday and being able to turn guys, it takes some upper body strength to be able to do that. I guess the only disappointment on the O-line is 63 out there. You just got to, you know, hey, let go of a jersey once in a while, buddy. I mean, gosh, seven penalties in three games, that's a little too much.
So, it's funny. I don't know that I'm not sure. I probably have, but I don't remember asking an offensive line coach ever. The one thing that seems strange about – that strikes me as strange about NFL rules is a lineman is blocking his guy, and he's grabbing him by the chest plate, which is legal. And it's legal. It's legal. It's legal. And then when the running back goes outside him and the guy tries to pull away to the outside, all of a sudden it's holding. And the blocker can't see what's going on behind him. What are they supposed to do there? I mean, it seems so strange that they don't do anything different, and the play goes from being legal to holding just because the running back takes a couple steps around them instead of cutting up inside.
Well, first of all, let's just call a spade, right? You all know that my least favorite guy on the field is the kicker. Second least favorite person on the field are those guys in white and black. I mean, God almighty, they're throwing flags like it's going out of style. And you're not part of the game. You're there to police the game. You're not part of the show. And these guys think it's their duty to throw a flag. So that
they're officiating the game the way the league wants them to, though. They get graded every game,
But come on with all the holding penalties. I mean, some of it is pretty ticky tack when it comes to the holding stuff.
So what do you know what a lineman's supposed to do there? I mean, he doesn't have eyes in the back of his head, so he can't tell where the guy
was. No, you're on no man's land. You mean if the guy is gonna try and get away and he's gonna spin off, you gotta let go. And then deal with it in the film room when a guy makes the tackle.
So you just got to feel basically when the guy is trying to pull away, and as soon as you feel that, you let go.
I mean, if the guy's starting to turn, or if he turns big direction, if your arms are going to leave your frame, you got to let go.
Okay.
If you keep your arms in your frame and you feel it's starting to go one way or the other, you got to let go, or at least stop holding on, and you can use the palm of your hand to jam them. Didn't they ever watch like NFL's greatest hits when they were growing up and see these guys just small people?
What they don't want to do is pay the $5,000 to $15,000 fine for it with the FedEx letter that they get in their locker on Wednesday. That's what they don't want. You hit them in the pocketbook, that'll change the way they that'll change their behavior.
Well, then they should fine those referees game checks for making stupid penalty calls.
Yeah, I don't think they're.
Anyways, I go off on a tangent. I just get tired of it. I mean, it is ruining the game. I don't care what anybody says. It is just the fan. It ruins the game with all that handkerchiefs on the ground. Let them play football. It's football. It's not two-hand touch.
What do you think with Jordan Love this week? You think he's playing?
You know, the guy in me says, yeah, you should go out and play if you can play. But I've been hanging around you far too long and become far too conservative with these injuries, especially with the $50 million guy out there. I think at this point in time, I think you put him on the shelf and let him get ready. Hopefully he's 100% for the Rams.
I think he's playing this week.
Yeah, I'm sure. I can see that. I just don't know if that's the smart move.
Yeah.
You know, if linemen, things like that, you can do some things and you don't have to be 100%. I just, he's a young guy. He's early in his career. I don't know if you want to, have something that could be a major injury that becomes kind of one of those nagging things for here on out,
Yeah. The one thing you don't want is to have it affect him, in December and January. But I wonder if them winning these two games has him thinking, I better get out there. I mean,
no.
That fear always drove Brett Favre. He would say that. He would say, "Hey, I got this job. because of an injury. And he goes, I didn't want to leave the field because I didn't want to lose the job the same way.
He's their guy. They're not getting rid of him. And they're, you know, somebody out there says, you got to go with the hot hand. BS. They got 50% of their playbook operating out there. When they get into playoff time, it's working now because it's week three, week eight, week 10, week 16. If you kept going with this guy, teams are going to figure it out.
Well, I think Willis would get hurt before then. He's just he's taking too many hits. The one factor that we don't know about is, you know, you also have to throw the agent factor in there too, because they're advising their clients and they can, you know, advise a guy to not play, looking out for, you know, they're thinking about, you know, years down the road, the third contract, the fourth contract. So we don't know what role the agents might be playing in this decision too, which I'm sure is another thing that you love to hear about.
Yeah. Go out and play football. But I just, if he's 90% week three or week four ball game, yeah, go for it. If he's not, sit him down. As a coach, you got to be the guy. And this is odd coming from me, right? But if you're a coach, sometimes, you know, you got to be smart.
And
you
just I think you're getting soft, Eric. You're getting older. You're getting soft. You're not
the hanging guy around all you. That's what's getting you doing.
Is that what it is?
I don't know. That or maybe I am getting old. I'm just afraid to admit it. I just think you got to be – I mean, it's different if you're a running back or someone like that, but I think at this point in the season, you're 2-1. What's the difference if you're 3-1 or 2-2? Nothing. You know, the first four games is just the first quarter. You'll get in a run later on, but, you know, the other part, too, that you got to take into effect is he going to be rusty sitting for 2 weeks?
I would think so.
I don't know. I would think so too. So maybe this is a good game to just go break out of it.
Let's jump to the other side of the ball. Eight sacks. It helped a lot to play a quarterback who's struggling, and he held the ball as the game went on. I think he held the ball a little too much. Do you make much?
Sometimes he couldn't even hold on to the ball. Those guys were coming pretty quick.
Yeah, there was a couple where they got in fast. Do you make much of this game, or
yes,
is this more taking advantage of a bad team with a young, struggling QB?
No. I think this is – so then the off season during training camp, you know, we're all excited about the pass rush, and then the first 2 weeks of the season, it's kind of ho-hum, right? And listen, the Eagles' offensive line was really good. And I don't know about the Colts' offensive line. I would say they're middle of the pack. Not better or not any worse than anyone else there. They're certainly not the Bears, and they're not the Eagles. They're somewhere in between. So, but the difference is you had two quarterbacks, that can hurt you with their feet. Jalen Hurts is ugly out of the pocket, and he's a bugger because he's not only can he throw it, but he's going to run it. And then you got that crazy horse, from Indy back there that he's runs all over the place. And not only is he going to run, but he will beat you with his feet. And they made the conscious effort with both of those quarterbacks to keep him in the pocket. That was their goal. They were going to keep him in the pocket. So this was the first game where you felt like they were going to unleash a little bit. And they certainly did. And it was early and it was often, and they were going after him. And there still was some priority to contain. That part was not – you could still see that they still wanted to, you know, have contain and have some discipline in their passing lanes or pass rush lanes. But the most important part is they got a rotation of players that are pretty good there. They got eight deep, probably really close to being two starting lines. You know, you got enough guys there where it's 100 degrees. And then you saw it take over in the second half, that those guys came in waves and had fresh legs in quarter three and quarter four. And you got those poor offensive linemen dying out there in 100-degree heat. That's why you have deep defensive lines, so that in the third and fourth quarter, in big, big games, those guys are going to be fresher than the O-line, and hopefully they can get home. and they seem to have the talent to get it done.
Seven of those eight played at least 40% of the snaps, defensive snaps.
No, still a lot less than 100% from those poor old linemen.
Yeah, right. And the only one who didn't was TJ Slayton, who's their main, you know, his main job is run stopping.
Right.
And they got ahead, so they were, you know, they were up two or three scores almost the entire game. So I don't know. That was pretty interesting. LaFleur talked about that actually today at his press conference too. You know, it reminded me that what was always the thing with Seattle when they had their great defenses. They had Michael Bennett, who was an outstanding player, but the rest of the guys were just good defensive linemen, and it seemed like they would sub out every two plays. And so they just came at you like maniacs, and I'm not putting the Packers in that class, but I do wonder if they have a little something going for them now, you know, because Gutekunst talked about when he drafted Wyatt, he talked about he wants to have rushing in waves, and they really didn't do it last year, not to the degree they're doing it this year. I don't know how much of that is, you know, Lucas Van Ness and Enagbare getting better, and how much of it is they're just getting a chance to do it more.
I think it's a little bit of both. you know, you know, Lucas Van Ness, you know, some people, oh, he's a first round pick, you know, playing in front of behind Preston Smith. You're not shaking a stick at it. That's something bad there. I mean, he's a good player. And Lucas Van Ness, you saw it yesterday. He is a motor guy with that. His first sack was a motor play. The fumble recovery was a motor play. You know, the guy's engine just doesn't stop, and he doesn't make any stupid mistakes schematically and plays well. I mean, he's a defensive lineman's coach's dream to have a guy that is technically sound, plays within the scheme, and yet pretty darn good. And, you know, you got that with that kid. And, you know, and Wyatt, I mean, this is his third year, and he is really coming on strong. And you got Gary. You know, I think the most impressive sack of the whole day got called back because of a stupid penalty, of course. But, I mean, his first sack that got called back, I mean, that was just that was a power move. He was power to speed and just overran that guy, and it was really, really a beautiful play. And it's too bad that a dumb flag on the field had to nullify that, because that was really something.
You know, the defensive play that jumped out to me, and people just can't appreciate this. So at Tennessee, the press box is nice and low. It's only like halfway up the stadium, and it's on the sideline. You don't get that anymore at all in this league. You know, the press box are now in the corners, way up high, and in the end zone, way up high. So this is by far the best view in a press box that you get in the league. And so I was probably at about the 30-yard line, and Cooper had a sack in the fourth quarter. I wish, like, people, because when I rewatched the game on TV, that just didn't do it justice at how fast he exploded on a blitz through that hole. And so he shared the sack with Enagbare, but I can see why. You know, I think there are people in the organization who really want them to get that guy on the field as much as possible, as quickly as possible. And I can see what they're thinking, because you have a linebacker who can blitz like that. That's like adding another, you know, a pass rushing defensive end almost to your defense with the threat that can provide.
Especially with his size.
When you watched it, could you see, could you tell how explosive he looked on that? It looked so much different seeing it live from that seat than I saw watching it on the TV.
He seemed to gain acceleration at the line of scrimmage. So he kind of like came in, picked his gap, you know, where he was going to sneak through, and just exploded. Just so quick through the line there, and played. He was at a pretty good pad level too. He was pretty low to the ground, and used his leverage. And man, he was just faster there. You're right. It happened like that. It was right there.
I wonder if they thought maybe Walker could kind of be that kind of guy, or could be that kind of guy. And he really hasn't proven he's an okay blitzer. But I wonder if this is the guy that they thought they might be getting with Walker. But he's clearly a notch better at this from what I can see.
Oh, on the blitz? Yeah, for sure. I still think that Quay would be better off blitzing off the edge than coming up the gut. But it's, you know, just a position he plays. But I, you know, So that was yours. Mine was the fourth and two. And I've been beating the tar out of Quay Walker and his ability to run, to be a run-stopping linebacker. And I'll stand on that soapbox even today. But I've always told you, and you've heard me say this a gazillion times, is you take your chances when you run away from them. And if you want to have success, you run at them. And, boy, that play there, he came from nowhere and snuffed that play out. You know, Levis tried to, you know, he had two options there, run or pass it to the tight end. And the tight end was covered pretty good by McDuffie. And then when McDuffie committed to the quarterback and drove on it, I don't think Levis was going to throw that ball because 23 was sitting back there driving on that tight end. And that would have stopped anybody from throwing the ball, especially after he just threw a pick six to that guy. But seven came out of nowhere to make sure that that play got stopped right there. And just made that was he accelerated so quick to the flat there to get that play snuffed out. It was just like a bolt of lightning. I mean, that guy could just flat out run. And that's why he's on that field.
Yeah, there's Levis. He's had a catastrophic turnover in each of the first two games. Then he has another one with the pick six to Alexander. When you just talked about that and then I rewatched it, it was like, yeah, there's no way he's going to try to loft that ball out there. It was actually a running back, not a tight end, but he was there was no way because he had floated over McDuffie and Alexander was there. And so by the time – and then Walker's screaming at him. So he didn't have much time to make the decision, so he just tucked it and ran. And that thing went nowhere.
Yeah, that was a heck of a defensive play. And you know, we talk a lot about the D line, and but how about the play out of their secondary so far this year? I mean, Xavier McKinney, three picks. I mean, the one last week was a kind of a gift. But man, you talk about taking a position of severe lack of ability and turning it into a strength in one season is really astounding with what they did there in the front office to get those guys in there. And not only that, but you see, you know, I don't know what it was. It seemed like last year Alexander must have really had a burr in his bonnet for that coaching staff because he is not the same player as he was last year. He is explosive. He's driving to the ball. I mean, two picks dropped in gimme in his third. I get that in Philly, but man, that was he. I just the way he's playing the football right now is really good.
Yeah, I was just I was thinking about this yesterday, and we didn't really talk about it, although we mentioned it when we were talking on the phone earlier today. But you know, they've got. I think there's a real a lot of head coaches are guys who worked with quarterbacks. I'm thinking a lot of D coordinators. Something seems to work with having DB coaches be D coordinators. There must be something about the panoramic view that they take. But Halfley's, his background is as a DB coach, and you know, look at the Packers secondary is playing this year. Talent's a big thing with the upgraded safety, but I wonder if the change with the coaching staff and having a coordinator who was a DB coach. I wonder if that's helping there too.
Yeah, I think so. I think the two go hand in hand, and you never see too many D-line coaches that are all of a sudden a coordinator because you got to understand leverage in the back end, and you got to be able to almost have like a 3D view of what's going on and how you're going to attack different formations. Not only that, but different route combinations. And it just looks like the Packers this year are so much more crisp into getting into their zones and doing the right thing in their zones, which seemed to lack last year. It looked like last year there were just guys running free all the time, and you don't see that a lot. I mean, there's always going to be space. When you play zone coverage, there's always going to be a little bit of gap. Like when you go from the linebacker to the cornerback safety level, there's always a gap there. But – you see those gaps not as big as they were. And you see, I think the other thing is you see the linebackers are carrying the routes further downfield than they did last year. And so those gaps are a little bit smaller. And some of that is personnel. You know, Quay Walker, I mean, on any given passing situation, he could be 25 yards downfield. I mean, and that's a tough guy to throw over the top, matched up against a slot receiver or a tight end. You know, that's that's tough for a linebacker to do.
So what do you think this week? The 3-0 Vikings coming into town. They're
Wait a second. We're not going there yet until we have a weekly kicker update.
Yes, I forgot. My mistake.
So kicker had zero tackles again, as usual. Still, you got to like the 44 on his jersey, right? I mean, he looks more like a fullback than he does a kicker. But 3 for 3 for the young buck.
Oh, but he missed. It just
Penalty. It's the referee screwed it up with a penalty.
Yeah. I mean, he missed the kick, and it's not like the penalty affected the, you know, the infraction.
I'm looking at the stat sheet right here. It says field goal made, field goal attempts, 3 for 3.
So you're going to give him a pass away from the young guy. You
other than he should only be wearing one bar across his face. That's it. One bar. Like Yanni
Simmons. Can't believe you are getting soft that you're giving him a pass on that. I'm surprised you're not ready to run him out of town.
If he was wearing 12 or 9 or something like that on his jersey, but he's got a 44, at least he's got a little bit of pride.
You know, I haven't asked him. I wonder if he ever played what other position he played growing up. I'll have to ask him that.
What do they call that? Left wing or something in soccer?
Yeah, no. I don't know if his background's in soccer or not, or if he played if he would have played, you know, youngster football. I guess I'll have to check with him in the locker room. Well, it looks like time has run out on us here, Eric. Well, no, let's finish up. This week, the Vikings, 3-0. They're riding a wave. Of course, everybody has them, you know, there are people talking about them like they're a Super Bowl team now, you know. But
well, of course.
What do you
still the preseason.
Yeah, I know. What do you think? Is he out? Do you think it's any different with a potentially rusty Love or – with Malik Willis, who they'll now have two weeks of game film on, do you think that makes much difference in the outcome?
No, I don't. The only thing that makes a difference in the outcome is going to be whether or not Darnold can play. You know, I didn't hear anything.
Sounds like he got an MRI today.
Yep,
it was fine. Sounds like he's playing this week.
Okay, good. Because then that won't be as bad of a blowout. But I got the Packers winning.
No kidding.
I don't care who the quarterback is.
I'm not sure they can keep doing this with Willis. On the other hand, you know, maybe he plays better a third straight week. If I was them, I'd be a little concerned because he runs it a lot. He took a couple hits the other day. If he were the QB for 17 games, I don't think he's making it through. That's the one thing that scares me about all these running quarterbacks. If I were their team, you know, it's so tough. If Cam Newton body breaks down really early in his career, relatively early, I don't know of anybody who's
going to last. All we need is one more week out of him.
Who's going to last? Yeah.
Who cares? One more week. That's all you need out of the guy. And then Love is back, and then he can rest up for a while and throw him back out there. I mean, it's a nice little wrinkle for the opposing defense. If he's out on the field, you got a lot more things you got to worry about.
I think Love's back this week. That's my just two-bit.
And that's perfect. You got everything you needed for that 7th round pick. You got two W's.
Yeah, those
– beat that with a stick.
The national – yeah. I mean, that is mind-blowing that they won both of those games. I thought there was a really decent chance they'd come out of that thing 0-3. You know, the national reports, which is, you know, basically coming from the agents, after they found out the extent of Love's injury, a couple of them said – you know, I know Schefter said on the Pat McAfee show – that they were shooting for him to be back for the Minnesota game. So I suspect that report was correct. And so I'm thinking we're going to see him this week, but just guessing, we don't have any inside info here.
Yeah, no, they'll never give anything out, but the truth will be told early enough in the week. You know, that'll be that's for sure. I don't know. I think with the way that they're playing offensively and the way that line is playing the last 2 weeks, if they just continue doing what they're doing, I think they – because they can control the clock. And that's such a big part of the game because now your defense is fresh and you got a bunch of big guys out there. Now, nice thing is this week it's going to be 70 degrees on Sunday and it won't be as taxing on them physically, but you're still going to be fresh. There's no doubt about it. And the defense can continue to make plays in the passing game and just hold up on the run a little bit better or as good. They'll be in great shape.
Well, we've definitely seen some interesting football the last couple of weeks. Been pretty fascinating, actually. But our time's up here, Eric. Our time's up, so we better wrap this up. I just want to say thanks to everybody for downloading us. Glad you think we're worth your time. And remind you that we'll be back again next week.
Tell your friends.
Same time and place, right?
That's right.
We'll be recapping our film review of the Packers-Vikings next Sunday, another noon start at Lambeau Field.
The best part about this game is they're playing in Green Bay. You don't have to listen to that stupid horn all the whole game.
Well, you get that later in the year. There's no avoiding that in this division. So, and Aaron Jones, by the way, very talented, fun player to watch. Packers will be on the other end of that for the first time, and that's tough. That's a really talented. That's a really gifted guy. I think he's got to rank among the top. I'm thinking three or four backs in Packers history. What do you think?
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, you got
when he's healthy.
You got Horning, Taylor.
On Green.
Yeah, you can go back to Clark Hinkle. I think I like Green was more durable, at least for a given season. But Aaron Jones scared me more than would scare me as a defensive coordinator more than Amon Green. And Amon Green was great, but Aaron Jones
was a downhill runner, man. He was dead speed, flat out lightning speed.
He did. Aaron Jones, though, man, he could turn nothing into 15 yards. He was one of the best. You know, he wasn't Barry Sanders, but you know, he's the next step down. So I don't know. I just always thought that guy was kind of a special player. Just durability issues prevented him from being a super stud. But anyway, time's up. So let's wrap this up, Eric. Just want to say thanks again to everybody and remind you we'll be back again next week, same time and place. For Eric, I'm Pete. You've been listening to the After Further Review podcast. Take care, everybody.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.